Om Shanti. So, my name is Brother Stephen, and I've been living here in Madhuban since 2006, and working at the Global Hospital in the management team there. And I'm originally from Australia. So, it's been my great fortune over the last 7 or 8 years to be continuously exposed to the environment that you all love. And as Baba says, that you fly here on the wings of your heart to come. And so I've had the opportunity to be really exposed to this atmosphere for a long period of time, to have had the sustenance of the daddies, and to have met Baba probably almost 100 times in that period. So I've really thought a lot about this particular topic that I've been given today around attitudes, how to understand and transform attitudes. And really loved it when Baba spoke about it in the first Merli. And I'm not sure how many of you have received this book. It's Transforming the Attitudes of Others Through Your Own Attitudes. It was a gift for 18th of January. Who has received this book? Okay, so very less. So hopefully I'll tell Didi to see if we can have it distributed. But it's just full of aspects around attitude. So a little bit about me and my Gyan story. I came into Gyan in Australia in 1994, and I really got sustained and dived deep into the knowledge when I went to live in the UK, and it was there that I really became a BK in the UK, and that was in Manchester, and I can remember quite clearly. It was the 18th of January, so this period of time is quite significant, and I'd travelled from Manchester to London for 18th of January day. And it was after that day, which was, I think, 2006, that I started to follow all of the principles. And it was there that Daddy Janki was there, and she was giving drishti. And it was after I took Daddy's drishti that I really saw this this soul that had so much power and just radiating out of her, and it just touched me deeply in my heart. And so it was quite interesting that when I came to live in Madhuban, I actually had to have 3 interviews with Daddy before they accepted me to come and live in Madhuban. And I think it was the reason why it's worked that I've stayed in Madhuban was I actually had no desire to come to Madhuban at all. It wasn't even in my radar that one day that I would come and live here. And so Daddy really wanted to make sure that that I had what it took to stay in Madhuban, and to, because she said to me, "You're going to receive a high jump by coming to Madhuban." But she said to me, "You have to dive deep into the ocean of knowledge. To be really, to stay here and stay within the family and everything that goes on in the family, you have to have a very deep understanding of the knowledge." So I really love to churn, and I really love to turn that knowledge into something that's really practical for me. Before I came here to live in Madhuban, actually in Australia I was only working 3 days a week, and the rest I was doing service, working in the centre, doing whatever was required. When I came to Madhuban, I work 6 days a week. And it was like, you know, in the past I always thought that work was sort of in the way of me and my spiritual stage. And when I came to Madhuban, I realized that work is the way. And so I really, what was really important to me and what was the foundation of that was often Baba speaks to us in a language that sometimes we have to transform into words or feelings that really penetrates our heart. And so when we use the word meditation, I prefer to use the word awareness. And the reason why I like that, it's something that we can really integrate into our walking, breathing life, everything that we do, is being more aware and more connected to our original stage, to our original qualities, to our huge resources that we have within us. And so I found that word much more useful than I'm meditating. So I found the word very useful for me. And I'm not saying that it will be useful for you, but that we have to find things that really connects for us. And that's what connects for me. So I really had my radar out for any words around that when Baba talks about awareness. And I remember many years ago a Merli where Baba said, awareness is the speciality of every human being. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? But the degree to which we are aware is another thing. And so I'm quite a visual learner, and I'm going to use the whiteboard. And another Merli Baba talked about, and it's really become the foundation of my whole spiritual life, where Baba talked about what I call the awareness tree, and I'm sure you've all heard it. And Baba says, as is our awareness, so is our vritti, our attitude. And I'll write this up on the board so that you can see it. As is our vritti, as is our attitude, so is our drishti. As is our drishti, so is our thoughts. As is our thoughts, so is our words. As is our words, so is our actions. And so this is really going to be the basis of this discussion today around attitude and what is attitude. And so I'm just going to write this up on the board, and I want this to be very interactive as well, because then it's more meaningful for you, something that you can take home. So I'm meant to carry this and write on the board and talk at the same time, because so this is what we call the seed, and it's really a flow-on effect. What awareness means to you, I mean, I can tell you in words, but it's really a feeling. It's really that process where we're really in that deep stage of silence, where we're really feeling who we are. The attitude, and it's very interesting how Baba's really focused on attitude and how important it is for us to serve with our attitude. And it's attitude that Baba says becomes before drishti, which for me, all of these are very subtle and very subtle powers and can be felt very subtly. So as is our awareness, so is our attitude. So is our attitude, so is our vision. Baba calls it drishti, or it's the way we see the world. Then it's our thoughts. Then it's our words. So the power very much lies in, this is the foundation for our awareness. So what is attitude? Once I heard Daddy Ratmahini, and this is Daddy Ratmahini's favourite subject. If you can pick up any old classes, she really goes into the details of this particular class. And something that really inspired me was about a month and a half ago, Bridge Moen gave a class in Pandav Bhavan. And in that class he said, the most important service that we have left to do is to transform our attitudes. So everybody's really focusing on it. So we really owe it to ourselves to really understand for ourselves what is attitude. Experiment with it. Feel it. Develop your deeper understanding of it. So I'm just up here giving you my understanding from my churnings. Then obviously you need to churn about it for yourself. And Daddy said that an attitude is anything that we've had a thought about more than twice. Any person, any situation, any feeling, any body, any place, anything that we've had a thought about. And so for me, the attitude is really a vibrational frequency, and you can feel it. And you can feel it before it's coming out of us, and you can feel it before a person speaks. Do you agree with me? Yep. You know when you're at work and you go up to somebody and you say good morning, and they say good morning back to you, and you know they're not having a good morning. You know? You can feel it. It's coming out of them. And it's this vibrational frequency where we have certain thoughts about ourselves, you know, certain thoughts about a person or a particular situation, and that vibrational frequency stays within the soul. And if it's not according to our truth, then it will affect the way we see the world, which is our vision. Yeah? Or it clouds our vision. It clouds the way we see. Just a couple of days ago, I saw a video, which was a social experiment, where they had this room and they had a forensic artist. Forensic artist, the person who works for the police department, who draws identity photos of people. And so this forensic artist was sitting in the room with his back to the person that would walk into the room, and the person would sit there. And this person would then have to describe themselves to the forensic artist. And the forensic artist, just purely on what they'd described, not seeing them, would then draw a picture of them. And he did that for 10 people. And then those 10 people were then brought into a room and they were broken up into pairs. And then they spent 15 to 20 minutes with another person and they were just chatting. Then they would bring in the person that had been observing the person that he had just drawn. And then he would ask them to describe that person to them. And from what they described, he drew a picture on the wall. On the paper. Then they asked the people to come in and look at the two pictures that the forensic scientist had just drawn. The picture based on their own description and the picture based on the description of the other person who had just met them that day and just seen them for 15 and 20 minutes. The difference was amazing. All of the pictures that they had described of themselves, the way he drew it, was generally with the face more contorted than it actually was, more tighter, more stressed. Their view of themselves was much different than the way the others had seen them. And the pictures of the way the others had seen them, their faces were glowing, they were full, their eyes were fresh. Yeah? So the way we see ourselves is very much the awareness of ourselves. And it very much is a vibration that we carry with us even before it's going out through our eyes and people can feel it. And I'm sure you've all had that situation where you've maybe come home from work and the family, there's some type of arguments happened in the family and it's a bit tense. Yep. There's a bit of a tense vibration in the house and people say you can cut the atmosphere with a knife. Atma is soul. The atmosphere that we have is according to the attitudes that we have. And so what are the different types of attitudes that we do carry? Again, these are just my thoughts. We're most likely to have attitudes, first of all, about people. Our friends, our family, the peoples that we work with, and they may be subtle attitudes. I don't know about you, but every workplace that I've ever gone into or worked in, and I think I've worked in 8 or 9 different workplaces, there's always been somebody that there's been a collective attitude about. There's always been somebody that everybody has a feeling or an attitude about who they are, and generally a negative attitude. Yep. And I remember in one particular place that I went into, and I knew that there was an attitude about this person, and I was trying as much as possible not to be influenced. Everywhere I was going, somebody or other was repeating something about that particular person. That they're like this, that they don't do this, they don't have good attention to detail, that they're always saying this, that they're da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So this, everybody that I met with was carrying some type of attitude about that particular person. And do you know what happened to me after some time? There was a weak link in me and that attitude about everybody else, and then all of a sudden one day I heard myself say something about that person. It's very, you know, it's very subtle, and it can happen in spiritual organizations. Yep. And we hold that person in that place with our own attitude. And that's why Baba says we have to have such a powerful attitude. If we hear something about somebody that they're always getting angry, that they're not cooperative with others, and we have that feeling in ourselves, we're actually holding that person to that attitude. Do you agree? Yeah? Yeah? We actually hold them. And so that's why Baba's really talking about that our ability to transform somebody, we then have to have the powerful attitude so that we can hold the space for them so that they can change. Now, I always use the Merle for my source of inspiration. So when I was listening to the Merle today, it was all about awareness, you know. And Baba is the master psychologist. So one of the awarenesses that Baba was giving us today was to be a world benefactor. Is that right? Was it world benefactor? Yep. So, is that right? Yeah, ancestor. So world benefactor. So Baba's the psychologist. The master psychologist. So what's he trying to appeal in us to transform? What's the opposite of being a world benefactor? Selfish, mean-spirited, holding the knowledge to ourselves, not sharing it to others, holding the light to ourselves, not giving it to others. So that's how he works. He gives us the opposite of it. Yep. And so what did he say? With the awareness of being a world benefactor. And with the awareness, we have to go into the depth of it. Feel it, know it. What does it mean? What does it feel like? What does it look like? Only then can we transform our attitudes that may be associated with the opposite of it. The other beautiful thing that I loved about today's Merle and the ancestor soul, which very much relates to this, and I had some new insights as a result of what Baba said today. So this is fresh churnings. Baba was talking about us being ancestors and us being the trunk. And what I realized is that this awareness tree is the trunk. We are living, walking trunks. Yeah? We are carrying this awareness, serving with our attitude, serving with our vision, serving with our thoughts, serving with our words, serving with our actions. That's every single moment that we're walking and talking and what we're doing. That's only when the branches and the leaves will be served. Yep. Does that make sense? Can you relate to that? And so that really made me think about what it really means to be an ancestor soul, is that every single moment, every single place that we go to or opportunity is to serve with our awareness. Because for me, living here in Mudderbarn, you're living with a family of BKs. Not everybody at the hospital that I work at is a BK, but many of them have been there for many years. And so you're working with your family. They all have the knowledge. They're all doing their own thing. And so, but there's also, I go to the market and I buy my vegetables and I buy things from the shops and I build relationships with those people. And if there's a sense of consistency in what I do, and if there's a sense in trust in the source, as in the person who's giving them information or the person who's interacting with them, they're more likely to trust. If there's a sense of consistency in what I'm doing, a sense of consistency in my interactions with them, a sense of consistency in my words and my style, then they're more likely to accept and be open to receiving at all of these different levels. The different levels being my attitude, my vision, my thoughts, my words and my actions. And so it's up to us to develop that sense of consistency in whatever we do so that we're serving with the attitude. So what are the other types of things that we have attitudes about? Attitudes about people. What are other things that we often have attitudes about? Places, yeah. Anybody say anything else? Yep, yep. We have attitudes about, you know, events, circumstances. This happened, that happened, they did this. Anything else? Past, yep. Can be circumstances as well. Religion, yep. Religion, politics. One of the things that I feel and see a lot is about money. You know, particularly, I had many attitudes about money when I came into this knowledge, and it's very much changed as I've gone along. Attitudes about service. What is service? What isn't service? Attitudes about work. Now, the reason why I'm just describing the different things is that attitudes are actually all pervasive. And it's only when we start to come into interaction with others in our workplace, in the family, that we start to reveal what our certain attitudes are. And so I'm just giving this as an example so that you can start to be more aware of the attitudes that you have in terms of relationships, whether it's the people that in the Brahman family that you're with, whether there's any subtle things that is interfering with the way that you see them. And it's interfering with the way, the quality of your relationship with them. And so what I've found is that it's in this place of silence that I can really become more aware of the various attitudes that I have. And there's various emotions and feelings that I find are triggers or barometers or symptoms that I have a particular attitude. And it'd be interesting to hear what some of your, I guess, triggers or symptoms are. But I'll just give you a few as ideas that has helped me. And one of the things that I found was wherever there's any avoidance, avoidance of a person, avoidance of a situation, it's always a trigger that I've got some attitude. It might be about myself, it might be about the other person. And I'll just give you a really simple example. I've just finished writing an article for an international journal about my experience at the hospital. It was the first time that I'd ever written such an article. And I had certain dates in which I had to get it done. And I knew for 6 weeks. And I kept putting it off. You know? And at the end it was a real rush. And there were certain attitudes that I had about myself that was preventing me from doing it. You know? I've never done anything like this. How can I do this? What is it that I've got to say that people want to read about? This is too difficult. This is going to take too much time. This is going to take me away from this. It's going to take me away from that. And I had to sit down and finally just listen and be aware of it and face them and just accept that I had the attitude. And as soon as I accepted it, then I could pass through it. But if I kept suppressing it, then the more I suppressed it, the more difficult it became. So for me, this has been a real symptom that there's some attitude. You know, if it's a particular person and I'm avoiding them, I don't want to work with them, I don't want to be near them, I don't want to travel in the same car with them, I don't want to go on the same flight to Mudurban with them. You know, whatever it might be, it'll trigger that you have some attitude. That is some repeated thought that you've had more than twice about that person, and it now has a vibrational frequency and prevents you from seeing the original qualities and the beauty of that person. So, if there's any avoidance or putting off a task, I find that is a symptom of that I have some attitude in place. And if there's any type of very much related, but if there's any type of procrastination, I find that I generally again have some attitude about my abilities. I have some limiting belief that it's not possible, and I'm not having full faith in abundance or things happening. What do you think are some of the symptoms that you have an attitude in place. What was that?
Thinking,
yeah. So you've got excessive thoughts. But what type of attitude would that be signalling? Yep, okay. But behind that, like, for example, in the procrastination and the avoidance, the attitude was that I'm not good enough, that I don't have the capabilities, etc. This is, the excessive thoughts is probably connected to both of those things. And I generally find it's a specific feeling that you can really, it's also got a something, not an action associated with it, but it's a non-action associated with it. You know, if there's any type of resistance about it. The other thing that I find is, for attitudes, is when I'm being defensive. If I'm being defensive about something that I've said or something that I've done, or, you know, I'm quick to bite or attack somebody, then I've generally got a limited attitude about myself and about the other person. Any other thoughts? What's that? Excuses, yeah. And what do you think, you know, like this situation, what is often the attitude one might have about self if you're making excuses? What's that? Lazy? Yep. Inadequacy, feeling inadequate, I can't do it, I'm not able to do it, yep. I've never done it before. Yep. So what I find that I have to do in these situations is I use them early, like I did today. You know, and Baba always gives us one particular powerful awareness in which to focus on, which is the remedy for transforming our attitudes and our visions. And the key, I think, is depth, is to really contemplate and go into the depth of that awareness. And for myself, I found that I was quite superficial in my churning. And it's really only when we can go into the depth of the particular awareness and what it means for us that we can hold ourselves in that space that this attitude begins to transform things. And we'll all have ways in which we can experiment with this. And I find that if I have anything when I'm at work, that, say, at the end of the day, if there's anything that's unresolved, or there's any particular issue that happened at work and I was thinking about that, and it's unresolved when I leave that seat, and the next day when I come into the office, the first thing, and I sit in that seat, what is the first thing that I'm going to think of? Issue from the previous day. This is where my churning started to realize that I was leaving the vibration of the problem of the previous day in my seat. You know, and so I'm very conscious of that, because wherever we go, whatever we do, we're leaving the vibration of it. And it's like, particularly in my room where I stay, I'm very, very careful of what happens in that room. The place where I sleep, the things that I do, the conversations that I have, how I think about myself. I think as I've gone on in my Brahman life, I have become more mature and more thoughtful about vibrations. And so I pay particular attention to creating the atmosphere in my room. I do special things, you know, put a candle on, put incense on, you know, put nice tablecloths, just really creating a lovely atmosphere, because everything that I do that's an attitude of sustaining myself is creating an attitude of love for myself. You know, even though I work 6 days a week, I still have my own garden here in Madhuban, where I have all of my herbs and my lettuces and different things, because I find that that act of sustaining myself and caring for myself is creating that whole vibration for anybody who comes into my room for a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or for dinner. And so this is up to us to really experiment, because I feel that the attitude that we have towards ourselves, that's what starts to create the atmosphere. I don't know about you, but when you first come into Brahman life, and if nobody else in your family is into this, then, you know, they see you as a bit weird. Yep. Anybody had that experience? Yeah. Quite weird. And so my family also found that I was pretty weird. But, and at first I was probably, was very weird and a bit off with the fairies and wasn't really that grounded. And as time has gone on, I've just made sure that I've spent lots of time with my family. I haven't talked about BK stuff, but they really notice the vibration. They really notice that when I'm doing the cooking. You know, my mother specifically said something to me. She said, "One thing I like about this BK, Stephen, is that your cooking has improved out of sight." You know? And so they feel that sense of, you're not saying anything, you're not giving them the knowledge, you're not talking about God speaking through the lotus lips of Brahma, you know. You're actually just being, and who you are is doing all of the speaking. And also the other barometer that I found from this is that whenever I've left a workplace, what the people say about you when you leave, you know, is a real thing. Is one, the place that when I left for Australia, he said, we don't know what it's going to be like when you're not here. You don't realise how much you're actually influencing the atmosphere and the environment. Or when somebody sits in your seat for a week, said, you know, Stephen, when I'm sitting at your desk, I feel so peaceful. You're actually, the vibrations is going into the matter and we forget about it, and it's this. It's the awareness that we have has a vibrational frequency, and it's actually travelling before us, before our drishti. Isn't that interesting? This is so subtle that I kept asking myself, why does Baba say, as is your awareness, so is your vritti, attitude. So is your attitude, so is your drishti. Why is attitude before drishti? Did you ask yourself this question? It's a real vibration that's coming out of us. And often we don't reflect about the effect that we have on the environment. And that's why I feel that this analogy of the trunk, Baba's saying that the real service, and as Bridge Moen said, the real service that we have left to do is to transform our attitudes. So, just how's that going? Is that is that what I've spoken about useful so far? Useful for anybody? Is it not useful? Would you tell me? Okay, sort of okay. Tiki. All right. So. I just wanted to share one thing that helps me. I know we're talking about attitudes, but my ability to get to this depth of what attitudes means for me is how I relate to all of the four subjects. And whenever I'm doing the course or teaching others about this beautiful, amazing knowledge that Baba has given us, I draw this circle on the board and I talk about the four subjects. And in the first quadrant of the circle, and in the circle I divide it into four. And in the first quadrant I put Gyan, and in the second quadrant I put Yoga. And in the third quadrant I put Dana. And in the fourth quadrant I put Seva. And I took this idea from a book by Nikki Takataret called Soul Power, which is she's a BK and a BK publication. And she had it in a box actually. And it didn't make sense to me, so I put it into a circle. And what we tend to do is that when we have the knowledge, and what happens in the religions, and we get evangelical, and we want to tell the world. And rather than going through the steps of Gyan, Yoga and Dana, we go straight from Gyan to Seva. Yep. Can you relate to that? And we bypass this beautiful process of really understanding. And Baba gives us so much Gyan. Gyan about the self. Gyan about the faculties of the soul. About him, who he is. How to relate to him. He gives us the Gyan of the drama, of the karma, etc. And it's through understanding the Gyan, the more we understand the Gyan, the more we can connect. The more aware we become, the more we can connect to the self. And the more we connect to the self, the more we connect to Baba, the more we connect to Baba, the more we connect to the drama, and everything's okay. And the more yoga we have, the more it becomes into our life. The dana comes into what we do. It becomes natural. It becomes easy. It just flows out of us. We become more patient. We become more easygoing. And then we don't even have to think about seva. It happens. You know? And then the more that we're serving people from our hearts, they're feeling what we've done. They can feel our empathy. They can feel our understanding. They can feel our care and attention that we're putting into our work. You know, they can feel that you're very thoughtful and you're thinking about the bigger picture and you're trying to work out how to make a difference in your workplace. And so the more that we serve others, the more the Gyan goes deeper into us. And the more the Gyan goes deeper into us, the more we connect. The more we connect, the more we inculcate, and then the more we serve. And so I find that this is my foundation. Because Baba has also said, I think it was just last season, about, you know, your foundation is the four subjects. And really understanding the four subjects. And I use this on the first day of the course, on the second day of the course, on the third, every day of the course. So that they get this real idea, and each day I tell them, this is the Gyan that we covered today. And this is the aspect of yoga that we covered today. And this part is up to you. And this part is up to you. And then the next week we talk about what was the difference in your life. What did you notice? What did the people around you notice? And whilst I was in Australia, I was just back there recently, and I was there long enough to be in the retreat centres, and I got to see people coming one weekend, and then a couple of weekends later coming back, and then a couple of weekends coming back, and just seeing the transformation. And I remember one particular girl, young lady, who you could see that when she came back she was different. And she came with her mother and her auntie, the first time. And her mother had come to Madhuban, to inner peace, inner power. And when her mother and her father came back from Madhuban, she just looked at them. And her father had so much transformed, she just said, I've got to go and do what you've done. He was so much transformed in the way he interacted with all of his children in the household, the way he went about things. She was so mesmerized, she said, I've got to do what he did. So she came. And within a week, she was telling me how in the immediate days afterwards, people came up to her and said, she'd just been for a weekend retreat, just a weekend retreat, and people said to her, she hadn't said anything. She said, you've changed. They could feel it in her vibration. They could feel it the way she was starting to see herself. Her image of herself had improved. She didn't have to say anything, but they could see it. And I'm sure all of you have got 1,000 of examples of this, yeah? For yourself and students that you've helped, etc. But I find that this provides a very useful framework for helping them really understand that we have to do the work, that this is a university and we're students and we have to study. And really what I want them to have the message when they go away is that this is a study and we have to do self-work. This is not an easy, you know, just listen and go away and you're transformed. We have to turn on it. We have to connect. We have to use it in our workplace. We get feedback from it, and that whole loop and cycle helps us really transform our attitudes. So any questions so far? So what's being said is the experience that when we change the attitude, it does have a vibration. And without having to say anything, it's the vibration that does the work. Yeah. Cal. Yeah, that's lovely. What Cal is saying is that the cleanliness of the intellect, I may not be able to have awareness, but if I keep on cleaning the intellect, then it happens. And this is this particular model that I use for churning. And I really agree with that. There are days where I feel like there is a cloud. But, you know, and I'm not feeling that connected. But I always find that the remedy for that is my churning. And how I take notice of what's being said to me in the Merli. And I must say that the way I take notes now in the Merli has changed dramatically from when I first started. Now I use an electronic device, and so as the different things are coming to me at the end and at the beginning, I'm connecting it all and writing it in a meaningful way to me, not verbatim of what's being said. What has that meant for me today? Even as I was taking notes on today, Merli was connected to this particular class. Because I was on that vibrational frequency, so I was picking up everything. Awareness, trunk, tree, ancestor. You know, it's all connected. And then I got the idea, trunk, we're walking trunks. Everything that we're doing. Because I was really interested in this book, and I hope that you do get a copy of it. Is that, you know, there's something like 70 different examples of the way to work on our attitude. So it really is a significant thing for us. Any other comments? Yes, brother. Yes, yes. Connect, yeah, yoga being connect to the self. So I'll then teach them the meditation steps. And then when we get into karma, I'll say the knowledge that we've given you today is about karma. Uh-huh. And then when we talk about drama, the knowledge that we've given you is about drama. So it's just a construct, because not everybody learns audio. People need visuals. So I like to do a mixture of things when I'm teaching. Any other comments? So let's just go into a little bit deeper, as Carl was suggesting, is about cultivating awareness and how to do that. And I'm sure that you've all developed your own ways to cultivate awareness, but for me, the foundation of it is making sure that when I'm listening to the Merle, that I'm on the vibrational frequency to receive. You know, if I'm going into Merle and there's unresolved stuff in my head about something that happened at work or something that's happened at home, that's the first blockage that I have. I'm not open to really receiving, because even though it's so many years since Baba spoke those words in Sakha, if we're in the right vibrational frequency, if we're subtle enough, it's as though Baba is there right now. They are his words, just being spoken by another person, but if we're in the right vibrational frequency, they'll go very deep into the soul. So really paying attention to that awareness when we're sitting for meditation, because that then provides us with the basis for our churning for the whole day, the applicability. And if you're finding that it's not that meaningful for you, then I would say to you that you weren't on the vibrational frequency. And you really need to question yourself or examine what was happening to you on that day that everything just went straight through. Yeah. So the churning aspect is making the things meaningful and practical for you. And when you're thinking about it, you know, just really go into the depths of it. What does it mean for you? Because this awareness aspect is when we can, is really a stage, and there's various stages to awareness. And what I find is that when we're, some things to help us cultivate that awareness is really the state of observation. And that's why I really find the term awareness is useful for me, because I've found that I've become more yogi the more I've understand awareness and integrated into my life. As I'm cleaning my teeth, as I'm washing my clothes, as I'm cooking, as I'm doing my gardening, as I'm typing on the computer, how really aware am I? And so the first step for me for awareness is really observing. To what extent am I really in the observer phase? And that circle that we did before, and all of the symptoms and signs of an attitude in place, that, you know, if I'm in the observer state and the feeling of avoidance or the feeling of a particular assumption about a person comes up, if I'm not in the observer state, then that will take over my thinking about that person and I'll go into old patterns of thinking. So my meditation practice for me is cultivating my ability to observe how I'm feeling right now, so Baba talks about it again and again, doesn't he? That be a detached observer, and for me, it's really the only way to remain aware, to be in a powerful awareness as that Baba has created for us, and. For me, there's several stages if you were to break it up clinically, it doesn't happen so quickly as this, but, you know, it's really being able to observe our thoughts our feelings, what we're feeling. And often I just ask myself, how am I feeling right now? And I found that that's a remarkable question to ask, and how often I really suppress my feelings. And I've really learned to cultivate, to become more feeling capable. And I realized how much I was actually suppressing my feelings, even after being a BK for so many years. And the more I developed that capability to sense my feelings and to ask deeper questions, I realized that beyond a feeling is another feeling often as well. So observing, and that process of really, once we've observed it, is acceptance. You know, what we call let it go, let it flow. Because the meditation experience is really giving the mind and the intellect new evidence around its possibility of how it can really work, and really sharpening the intellect. As Kalvinda said, is that every time we use the intellect, we're making it more capable, more stronger, so that whenever we pick up a thought or a feeling that's much deeper, we're strengthening the intellect. And the stronger the intellect is, the more hold or more focus that we can have on one particular thought and stay with that. Can you remember last week's Avyak Murli? What was the theme of last week's Murli? Avyak. Anybody remember? Test. Come on. You can do it. Yeah. Stability. Yeah. Yeah, that's always a winner, isn't it? It's always a winner. But she was talking about the stability to be able to be in that one thought, concentrated. And so often I find that this is a really key capability to observe. You can never do enough observing. You know, it really is as if you were to be going for a job in a workplace, I would call this a key competency of being a BK, you know, of learning how to be the observer, is accepting it and letting it go and letting it flow. Because only then, and I find that again and again throughout the day, observing how I'm feeling, because different things will bring up different feelings. You know, I might be in a meeting with one group of people talking about one particular subject, and it might bring something else up. And if I'm not in this state of observing, only then can I direct, or what I say is, really that enables me to listen and connect to my deeper qualities. Because if I'm not observing, then I get caught up in old sanskars or old ways of thinking that come up on the screen of my mind, and I'm not able to listen to the deeper self, the intuition, the silence, the power to pack up. I'm not able to connect and draw on all of the spiritual powers that I have available to me because I'm not a detached observer. And we really have to turn this into something that is real for us, not just words on a page. And a retreat that I was running in Australia, and it was called Turning the Ordinary into the Extraordinary. And the whole idea of the retreat was about awareness. And what we were doing was that we were getting these people, many of these people had come to retreat after retreat after retreat, and then would sit them down on the first night and I'd ask them, how's your meditation going? And they'd say, don't have time for it. You know, they'll come after again and again, and they come for the hit on the weekend because they're all out of power and they want to come and get recharged again. So we really had to think about that, and we got them to really start to, rather than use the word meditation, let's use the word awareness. And so then what we asked them to do was to find one activity that you do every day to be more aware whilst you're doing that activity, and we're only asking for 10 minutes. And so we got everybody to decide on whatever it was. It had to be have a clear beginning point and a clear end point. You know, some people said from the minute I go into the bathroom to the minute that I go out. Somebody said I water my plants every day. Somebody says I make myself a coffee with my little percolator. It takes me 10 minutes. I'm going to do that. Fine. It didn't matter what it was. And so during that weekend, we gave them examples. We'd get them to go away and make a cup of tea and just be aware of that task. Not be task conscious, but be more aware of how you're feeling, where your thoughts are going. And then come back and reflect to us. It was amazing. You know, people started to realize that, yeah, I can do this. You know, I can integrate this awareness into my life. And me also, because I'm teaching it, I have to be more aware that I'm actually it. And so I was practicing that when I went to the bathroom, and then I realized it was starting to spread more and more and more into different tasks of my life. I was just being really more conscious when I would walk from my room down to the retreat center, or if I was going out to the shopping center. You know, just different things, it just started to spread into my life. So I found that this process of observing, accepting, enables me to really listen to my intuition and my inner voice and all of my spiritual powers. And then I've got them on tap. But the moment I become so task conscious and I'm really absorbed in that task and I've forgotten about being aware, then I'm closing myself off to all of these spiritual powers. And the task will not be as effective as it is when I'm really connected to the spiritual awareness. And obviously, the seed, I call this a seed as our awareness, but it's Bubba is the seed that makes us the trunk strong. So, they're my sharings and my journeys. I hope you found them useful. So please be free to visit at the hospital and say hello whenever you come. And it's really nice to be here, and I don't often get the opportunity to share or actually be up front and lead Drishti, so it was very nice to receive those powerful vibrations coming from everybody. I think that the person at the front is more luckier than the people there when Drishti's happening. You're really getting a charge. Okay, any more questions or thoughts or comments? And very happy to receive any feedback, whether you thought this was useful or not. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what your question of me is. Doze off. Yeah. Brother Raju said something that really touched my heart. Raju Murli Department, who does all the Murlis. It's Raju, isn't it? Yeah, Raju. And every year we have, for surrendered brothers and sisters, we have separate retreats. And we had a retreat for the surrendered brothers in Shantivan, and he was talking about this particular subject, and he said it's very important that you're, when you're meditating, if you're feeling sleepy, get up. He said just get up, because otherwise you're creating the sand scars of being sleepy. And the same, I take that for Murli. Sometimes I'm, you know, because of work and different things, I'm in Murli, I'm feeling sleepy. And the minute I start feeling sleepy, I just get up and I go outside. I've got my earphones on, I go out, wash my face, I walk outside in the fresh air, I'm still listening to the Murli, but I'm very conscious of not creating the sand scars of listening to the Merli whilst being sleepy, or meditating whilst being sleepy, get up. Or Amrit Vala, get up. Is that useful? Yeah. Look, people will feel the attitude that you have about your work, and that's why I wrote work up there. If you think work is just to get the money so you can get the Madhavan, it won't work. You know, you've got to love what you do and do what you love, always. Whether it's your work or wherever you are. And, you know, a BK friend of mine in Australia, she's an artist. And it's hard being an artist sometimes, you know, getting the money in. And so she has a job as a cleaner. And she struggled for many years because she felt that the cleaning was taking her away from her art. And then recently, one of her clients, husband and wife, their child died. He was 12 years of age. And she'd been cleaning for them prior to the child dying for many, many years. And then after the child died, she continued the cleaning. And they commented to her that, and she was saying, I'm going to quit, I'm going to go away and do some other things. And said, no, you can't. You're the thing. You're the person, and she hardly speaks to them, that has enabled us to survive after our child left the body. Your peace and your calm and your presence in our house and how you go about your work is really an inspiration to us. Huh? She's not doing art. And then she realized that it's everything she does. Any opportunity, any task we do is an opportunity to connect. If we're doing it with our heart, the people around us will feel it. You know, whether it's you're working on a spreadsheet or whether you're anything. And I had this experience very early on in my life. The BK sister at the centre was working at the same hospital that I was working at. And one day she gave me an envelope to take to the hospital to give to one of the managers at work. And this particular manager, I'd been working at that hospital for many years and I'd never seen him smile, period. And I remember this hospital was a very long corridor and I was walking along the corridor carrying this envelope. And as I was carrying the envelope, I was feeling really happy. I was wondering, why am I feeling happy? And then I saw him and he was standing at the end of the corridor and he was with some people. And I saw him and he started to smile. And I looked and I'm a bit closer and I got closer and he was smiling and I gave him the envelope and we had a nice chat and then I went away and I went back to the sister at the end of the day and I told her what my experience was. And she said, that's because when I was writing the letter, I was focusing on happiness. As I was putting the letter in the envelope, I was focusing on happiness. As I was putting the sticky tape on the sealant, I was focusing on happiness. Believe it or not. So I think that there's lots of things that we can experiment with. Every single thing that we do spreads a vibration. And we just need to remember it when we're seated, when we're at lunch, eating with everybody at work, travelling with them, interacting with them, they're getting something from us. Okay, my time is up. Let's have some yoga.